must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD, and we are live, like we are every day, Monday through Friday. And today is Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my goodness. Thank goodness it is Friday. I hope all of you out there had a wonderful holiday yesterday. I barely woke up this morning due to the turkey coma that I was in. Boulevard still has not recovered yet, but the good news is that there is plenty of turkey left for sandwiches, so the weekend should be awesome. And really, that's really what Thanksgiving is about to me, is not the big turkey. It's about the sandwiches the next day. And despite how full I was last night, I still managed to cram some pie and some ice cream in there, and it was awesome. Just want to say thank you for all of you out there who spent the morning with us. Greg and I had a really, really in-depth conversation about the mortgage crisis, and a lot of good feedback from you guys out there. So thank you guys for tuning in every day and making this part of your extended family here at Red Pill Reports. We are doing everything we can to keep you guys up to date on the latest news and to bring you the best guests in the industry, some interesting topics as much as we can possibly do that. Today should be an interesting show in that vein. It's my unfortunate duty to report that Michael Rosecliffe will most likely not be joining us today. I believe he is dealing with some power situations. There were a lot of people without power on the East Coast in the last couple of days because of the snow. I know that my producer Jeff woke up to about 6 more inches this morning and probably sighed heavily as usual. So I'm thinking that might have been what happened to Michael. But as a lucky side note, Chris Geo is going to come join us again today at the 11 o'clock hour. Chris Geo and I and his wife Cherie had a very interesting discussion earlier this week about interdimensional exploration. But I promise today we're going to keep it a little bit more in this dimension. We'll talk a little bit about greed, about this Black Friday situation that's carrying on across the country right now, and talk a little bit about the coming global consciousness shift, which we are all trying to be a catalyst for here at Red Pill Reports, and as well as at Truth Frequency Radio. I know all of the hosts work very hard to try and break down the matrix that we all find ourselves in. And, of course, that's what we're trying to do here at Red Pill Reports also. So please do check out the website. Robert has been doing a fantastic job keeping the news updated and making the site just look better and better every single day, and today being no exception. You can always go to the show link for today. It's always at the top of the page in the news section, and then you can follow along with all of the articles that we're going to be covering, trying to keep you guys up to date. And there's always more stuff than I'm able to cover. So let me think. If I forget anything, Thanksgiving, Friday, everybody's happy. Okay, let's move into the national news, and we'll break this happiness right down, because there are a lot of crazy things going on in the world. Big story coming out of Venezuela right now. The Venezuelan opposition leader, Maria Machado, is going to be charged next week with her involvement in an alleged plot to kill President Maduro, the state's prosecutor's office said on Wednesday. The ruling Socialist Party leaders in May accused the group of opposition activists, including Machado, of planning Maduro's assassination to pave the way for a coup. Opposition critics dismissed the accusation as a charade based on forged documents. But government supporters do point out that the opposition back in 2002 staged a brief coup attempt against the late President Hugo Chavez and launched several national strikes as part of a failed effort to force him from office. So did it happen? Kind of hard to say at this point, but they're going to go ahead and charge her with her involvement in that alleged plot. So we'll keep an eye on that and tell you which way that is going to go. News coming out of the Ukraine right now, Yatsenyuk is warning of war as he is voted to continue to be the Ukraine's premier. He received lawmakers' approval just earlier this week to remain the Ukraine's premier, clearing international obstacles for aid, talks with the International Monetary Fund as the country grapples with a separatist insurgency out in the east. Obviously, Ukraine right now is struggling with the deepest recession since 2009 as the military conflict with pro-Russian militants in the eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk disrupts production in the industrialized heartland. The government is seeking to draw $2.8 billion from a $17 billion IMF loan by the end of the year to stabilize the economy ravaged by the insurgency and a 45% slump in the hryvnia, which is the money. The money denomination in the Ukraine, the hryvnia, that's what it is, sorry guys, and the central bank reserves plunging to the lowest level in a decade. So they've cited a 45% slump in the value of their currency, plus gold reserves breaking barriers down almost to the lowest level in a decade. He says, this is Yatsenyuk talking, he says, our country is at war and the people are in trouble. And it depends on whether or not we can stop this external aggression from Russia. The Washington-based IMF ended a two-week mission to back in November, on the 25th of November, and the lenders' representatives will return to discuss disbursements once a government has been formed, according to the central bank governor. And Ukraine's parliament will approve the entire cabinet on the 2nd of December, and newly installed parliamentary speaker said after the vote on Wednesday. So it looks like Ukraine is pulling their government together. Yatsenyuk will remain the premier because on the 2nd of December they should be able to vote their entire cabinet, which will open them up more for some of that money from the IMF, obviously part of the plan there. And we had that article yesterday about their intention to join NATO if and when the criteria are met. Moving on to Israeli news right now. Part of this new sweeping counterterrorism law reform package that just was tabled on Wednesday might make waving the Palestinian flag at demonstrations illegal and provide convictions for throwing firecrackers punishable by deportation to the Gaza Strip. In a move designed to halt the glorification of terrorism, the proposed law would also criminalize the printing of posters frequently distributed amongst the Palestinian community in the aftermath of attacks that celebrate the killers as martyrs. Other proposals in the document would see the beefing up and legal affirmation of controversial measures already in tentative use, such as the demolition of terrorist suspects' families' homes, not returning the bodies of terror attacks to their families, and revoking the citizenship or residency of relatives that support those terrorism actions. And the proposed package of counterterrorism laws suggested as temporary measures to deal with the current crisis will almost certainly further inflame tensions between Israelis and Palestinians, and also likely augment further bickering in Israel's internal politics. So, soon to be waving a Palestinian flag in Israel will be punishable, and potentially be considered a terrorist act. So there you go. Not going to be calming down in Israel anytime soon. Iraqi warplanes killed an ISIS commander of HEAT and 22 of his aides. This is a report coming from the Iraqi News saying that on Wednesday, the president, al-Baghdadi, announced that the ISIS military of HEAT district and 22 of his key aides have been killed in an airstrike as of Wednesday. So that is still happening there. More turmoil going on in the Middle East. Jumping back into Israel quickly, I hate to be bouncing around, guys, but I apologize for that. Israel said on Thursday that it had foiled plans by Islamic group Hamas to attack Israelis in Jerusalem's largest soccer stadium and other parts of the cities and the occupied West Banks, though Hamas says it has no information on these allegations. Israeli security service said that it had arrested 30 members of the group in September, some of whom had received weapons and explosive training from Hamas militants in Jordan and the Gaza Strip, planning for attacks against Israeli targets, including Jerusalem's Teddy soccer stadium and the city's light railway, was carried out by Hamas officials in Turkey, according to, again, the security forces there in Iraq. I'm sorry, in Israel. In the Gaza Strip, where Hamas is dominant, a spokesman for the group said that they have no identification or information about these Israeli claims, and they're saying it is clear that Israel wants to create a new story to divert the world's attention away from the escalation in Jerusalem. So, is it true? Who knows? It's difficult to say. I think the rhetoric between Hamas and Israel is only going to get worse and worse. Interesting, though, that the plot was supposedly hatched in Turkey. And, boy, I can't imagine being in Palestine right now and having supposedly a member of your government, you know, plotting against Israel but doing it in another country and then you paying the price for it. But that's essentially what's going to happen. Huge news out of Mexico, and this relates to the 43 missing students. But Mexico's embattled president unveiled sweeping reforms this week to dissolve corruption-plagued municipal police forces nationwide amid an outcry over the role of gang-affiliated authorities in the presumed slaughter of the 43 students. More carnage hit Mexico hours before President Nieto's announcement with the discovery of 11 more beheaded bodies in the troubled southern state of Guerrero, which is the same reason that the students were attacked in back in September. So now President Nieto said he is going to send a set of constitutional reforms to Congress on Monday to allow federal authorities to take over municipalities infiltrated by drug cartels. He says the municipalities also include the dissolution of the country's 1,800 municipal police forces, which can be easily corrupted by criminals. So they are going to wipe out across the entire country of Mexico all of the municipal police departments because they are as corrupt as the day is long, ladies and gentlemen, and they are going to replace them with federal authorities and federal police officers. So I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing, but if it does something to get the corruption out of the local police forces in Mexico, then I am 100% behind it. So we will see if that actually happens or not. Let's move on to some American news right meow. Let's see. Sources indicate... I hate to bring up Ferguson again, guys. I know that everybody is talking about Ferguson right now. But here's the deal. We talked a little bit yesterday about the fact that both of these groups, the police officers and the African Americans in the community, they've all been maligned, guys. They've all been completely conditioned to be exactly what it is that they're supposed to be. This is part of the divide and conquer program. I think I'll ask Chris about this later, and I think he will corroborate it. So I'm not going to sit here and talk about the race card, because the race card is not something that I want to talk about. I don't care if Mr. Brown was a thug or not. Hitting a police officer in the face does not carry with it the death penalty in Missouri or really anywhere. And I also find it really interesting that initially all the police reports were showing pictures of Darren Wilson with that big orbital eye socket fracture. You guys remember that? Well, they've released the pictures of him now. Doesn't have any kind of, I mean, he's got like a bruise on his face. Nothing really, essentially. But anyway, getting away from that, there has been, you know, after this trial that took place, this grand jury non-indictment of Darren Wilson, there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of documents that have been released, and people are combing over them trying to find inconsistencies and things. And something came to my attention yesterday, a mistake that was made in that trial that was shocking to me. And I'm going to get to that story in just a second, because it needs to be discussed. But I'll back away from that for just a second, and we'll come back. But I want you guys to be ready for this, because that trial, a gross miscarriage of justice. That's all I'm going to say about it, and I'll tell you why I feel like that in just a second. But two members of the Black Panther Party, the new Black Panther Party, not the one that Larry Pinckney started, were arrested on federal weapons charges. And they were planning on blowing up the arch in St. Louis, apparently. And they were planning on killing St. Louis County Prosecutor Bob McCullough and also Ferguson Police Chief Tom Jackson. This is according to a News Channel 5 report. The men identified in an indictment as Brandon Baldwin and Olajuwon Davis are said to have been given false information and bought guns from the Cabela's in Hazelwood, Missouri. They were both arrested on the 20th of November. They've apparently been being investigated for months, and they were aggressively pursuing explosive devices. So that's about as much of the story as we have right now, but a plot to blow up the St. Louis Arch, apparently foiled by the good people in St. Louis. So that happened. Okay, shocking mistake in this indictment trial. I'm going to try... Also, when you go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section, I always try and include a video at the bottom, just something to think about. But I actually included the video from this article because there actually isn't an article revolved, so I'm going to try and give you a synopsis of it. But if you don't like my synopsis or don't have time to listen or don't care, go and watch this video because the gentleman who is talking, I think it's Lawrence O'Donnell, lays this out much better than I'm going to be able to, but I want to give you guys the synopsis of what happened. Okay, so we're talking about the indictment trial. We're talking about Darren Wilson, and we're talking about moments before Darren Wilson is set to give his testimony as to what happened to the grand jury. There were two St. Louis County prosecutors, one David McCullough, the other one is a woman named Angela. I don't know what her last name is. I haven't been able to find it this morning. It's not important. There's two St. Louis County prosecutors. The point of the story is that Darren Wilson did not even need to have a defense attorney. He did not need one because the prosecuting attorneys gave him a pass. And this is how they did it. Moments before he gave his testimony to the grand jury, the female prosecuting attorney here in St. Louis County passed out a copy of a statute, right? The copy of the statute is in the state of Missouri. It's 563.046. And the statute pertains to when it is allowable for a police officer to use deadly force and when it is not allowable for when a police officer uses deadly force. Okay? So she gave them this rule and she said that to them. She says, this is the rule on the books of Missouri that tells you when a police officer is allowed to use deadly force. In that statute, it says that a police officer is allowed to use deadly force if they want, when it is necessary to control somebody from getting away from a crime scene. You have the permission to shoot someone if they are fleeing a crime scene, okay? The problem is, ladies and gentlemen, that law was struck down by the United States Supreme Court in 1985. It has never been a law on the books in Missouri in the entire career of Miss Alizide, who is the woman assistant prosecutor. Never been a law on the books of Missouri since 1985. So she goes, she says, police officers have the right to shoot somebody if they are running away and they need to affect the ability to retain that person, okay? So gives them that, completely unconstitutional, completely non-realistic. It gets worse, okay? 3 weeks after the testimony, obviously the trial went on for what, 7 weeks? Weeks and weeks later, knowing full well that she has given the jury improper instruction, she finally comes to the conclusion that maybe she needs to address that issue, okay? And right before the wrapping up of the entire trial, she comes back to the jury and says, okay, a couple of weeks ago, I gave you guys a statute. And it's come to my attention, you know, we're all learning together here as we do our research. It's come to my attention that certain aspects of that statute are not entirely accurate, okay? I'm going to give you now the real law in the state of Missouri, which says at no point that you can shoot a person for fleeing, right? Not applicable. So fold up the initial one that I gave you and put it aside. I don't want you guys getting confused between the two of these two statutes. I don't want to say that first one is completely inaccurate, but it's also not completely accurate. And that's where she left it. Never at any point does she go in and explain what the aspects of the law are that are clearly unconstitutional, okay? So one of the grand jurors, bless his heart, raises his hand and says, are we to understand then that the United States Supreme Court law overrides Missouri state statutes, right? That's a pretty easy question to answer. The entire answer is surmisable in one word. Yes. Which is why we don't have segregated schools anymore, because the federal government's laws override statutes in places like Arkansas and Missouri, which is why we don't have segregated schools. Instead of saying that, which would have been the correct answer. Yes, the Supreme Court law does in fact trump Missouri state statutes. She said, that's not anything that you guys need to worry about. That's literally exactly what she said verbatim. That's just not something you guys need to worry about. At which point, the second prosecuting attorney, Mr. McCullough, chimes in and says, well, we're not teaching a law class here. Are you kidding me? We're not teaching a law class, but we're putting potentially the life of somebody into the hands of a group of people, and we are instructing them incorrectly. We are telling them that they have, it's just absolutely unbelievable. And that is 100% what happened in this trial. And if you don't recognize that as a gross miscarriage of justice, that Darren Wilson did not need to have a defense attorney. If they come out and they say that use of force was authorized because that man was leaving and then they never come back and clarify it, well, you just eliminated the only hurdle that Darren Wilson had to get over in his defense. So there you go. That's what's happened. There's probably going to be more information forthcoming in the future, but that one instance right there to me provides so much evidence of a gross miscarriage of justice that it is shocking to me. It is shocking to me that she would mislead the jurors in such a way and then not seek to clarify for them. At no point in the trial did she ever articulate what it was in that first law that she passed out that was not accurate, that was not constitutional. That is her only job, and it was never challenged by the defense attorney. So if you don't see that as a gross miscarriage of justice, I don't know. We probably can't be friends anymore, and I we'll just have to take a 5-minute friendship break. But that's what's going on. I'll digress away from that. But I wanted to point that out. That is a shocking piece of information, and it boggles my mind. Okay, let's move on. Texas, some good news out of Texas, out of Austin this week. The controversial law, which allowed police to collect blood samples without a warrant from drivers who refuse, is now been deemed unconstitutional by the Texas Court of Appeals, and they decided that Wednesday. So no more unconstitutional blood draws going on in Texas, and that is fantastic news. You better have more than a judge and a warrant if you're going to come and try and stick a needle in my arm, buddy. Just saying. Oh, man, and I got to talk also about the shooting in Cleveland of that 12-year-old boy with the fake gun. They released the video yesterday, and ladies and gentlemen, again, you know, I'm not going to sit here and talk about the race card because I don't believe that it is a race issue, although I do believe that some law enforcement officers are highly guarded against African Americans. But this situation, you can see the video. Again, we included it in the link today. It's black and white. It's grainy. The boy's movements appear pretty jerky, and they're hard to decipher. But he can be seen pacing on the sidewalk. He's walking around with his airsoft pistol, just like I did when I was 12. I mean, gosh, when I was 12, we used to ride our bikes in a circle with somebody with a slingshot in the middle shooting rocks at us. It's a wonder any of us even have eyeballs anymore. But if you were to see something like that as a police officer nowadays, probably shoot the guy with the slingshot. Just harmless fun. But anyway, 12-year-old boy walking around with a fake airsoft weapon. What bothers me about this story is that the police officers were responding thinking that the man had a gun, which is what the police are saying now. Although the 911 caller said it's most likely a fake and the kid is probably a kid, the police officers didn't get that information. So they believed that they were on a quote-unquote gun run. And the guy who called eventually left the gazebo, so they left this kid just kind of walking around. But what bothers me about it is that they shot this kid within a second of leaving the car. Now, there's no audio in the video, and the police are saying that they had their window down, and they were yelling at this kid to put his hands in the air. But they pulled up right next to this kid, just like the guy with the knife that nobody's talking about now, the black kid with the knife in Ferguson, like a week after Michael Brown died. Walking around with a knife, obviously not in a position to de-escalate the situation. And what do the police officers do? They pull up right next to the guy. I mean, within 3 feet of the guy. That's not how you approach a suspect when you're trying to de-escalate. That is how you approach a suspect if you want to eliminate the threat immediately and not take any opportunity to learn about what's actually going on. But police officer exited the vehicle, shot him within a second of leaving the vehicle. And then the other guy jumps out, you know, hides behind the car. But go and watch this video. I mean, this is classic poor police training. If you're concerned about somebody, why would you pull up right next to him? Why would you put yourself in harm's way? Why wouldn't you park a block away, get some backup, isolate the guy, figure out what is going on. Take an opportunity to learn and assess the situation. If you're the only people there, you know, in the, with the capability of de-escalating the situation, guess what? That's your number one job, not shooting a guy. That's just, oh man, just ridiculous. But anyway, go watch that video. I'd love to know what you guys think about it. I think it's disgusting, personally. Another banker death, probably ought to mention that. A week after the Tribeca woke up to the news of the grisly death in which a Citigroup managing director living in Greenwich was found in his bathtub with the throat slit. Remember that? And they said it was, at first they said it there was a lack of a suicide weapon, and then they came back and said they found the knife, so I don't believe any of that. Obviously suicide. If you're going to commit suicide, slashing your own throat, probably not at the top of the list, especially if you're super wealthy and can buy all kinds of pills and things like that. Or, I don't know, a gun. Who knows? I would want to take the quick way out, but that's just me. Anyway, yesterday, 54-year-old Melissa Millian, who is a senior vice president at Mass Mutual, was found laying in the road in Connecticut, having been stabbed in the chest. And as CBS initially reported, there was speculation that she may have been involved in a bicycle accident or a hit and run. But Saturday, the chief state medical examiner said the cause of her death was a stab wound to the chest. They say she could have been out jogging. They're not really sure what happened, and they're still going to be investigating. So, of course, this one will fall into the ether, and we'll never hear about it again. Why you would just stab somebody out jogging if it wasn't a robbery? I would imagine if it was a robbery, they would have mentioned that. I don't know a lot of people who go out jogging with, you know, their wallets and things like that on them. But another banker death, stabbed to death. What does it all mean? I don't know. Maybe Chris Gio will give us a little bit of insight at the 11 o'clock hour. Anyway, we are just about ready to go to a 3-minute break, you guys. When we come back, we've got some health news and some tech news. And Chris Gio, as I mentioned, will be joining us at the 11 o'clock hour. It should be a pretty fascinating conversation. We'll try and keep it on this planet this time. Thank you guys for being here. This is your Daily Dose of Deep Programming, and my name is JD. We'll be back in 3 minutes, guys. Stick right here.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I'm telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor.
I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine now, only at MUSA.org.
The 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon.
Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is, of course, your daily dose of the programming, and I am JD, just like I was yesterday, and just like I will be on Monday. Want to give you a heads up that Ken Shortkin Jr. will be joining us on Monday at 11. He is part of the DailyEconomist.com crowd, and we will have a very interesting conversation on Monday, so do be sure to tune in for that. Also want to re-mention that Chris Geo will be joining us at 11 o'clock today. We're going to be talking a little bit about media manipulation, probably this Ferguson situation, and something called Operation Mountain Guardian, which is not something I am familiar with, so I can't give you guys a heads up on that. But I am always interested in anything Chris has to say, because he is one of the most diversely educated men that I've ever run across in my life. So that will be very interesting. Do stay tuned for that. Want to get back into a little bit of national news, and I want to readdress the Ferguson situation one more time, just to point out something that most people might not know, is that St. Louis County Prosecutor McCullough is also the president of Backstoppers.org, which is a, it's essentially a charity group that gives money to the families of fallen officers. And I'm not saying that that is a bad thing, but I do find it interesting that he represents a group that is so tied to promoting the integrity of officers, while at the same time trying to, or being in charge of prosecuting one of the also members of that group, Darren Wilson. Interesting. Anyway, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has got a book. It's going to be out on the 1st of December, and it will be chock full of all kinds of new revelations, according to the WikiLeaks founder. One of which, according to Julian Assange, is that Google, in fact, works for the U.S. State Department. Yes, that's true. Google, in fact, according to Julian Assange, works directly for the U.S. government. Why does he say this? He says this because he attended meetings with U.S. government officials last year and in 2011. He met with the Google president, Eric Schmidt, and board members, Jared Cohen. But the meeting was also attended by Lisa Shields and Scott Malcolmson, who turned out to be Washington's diplomatic envoys. So the guy goes on in his book, Julian Assange, to say that he was visited by a group of people, three-quarters of whom were representatives of the U.S. State Department, and the rest were all from Google. And according to this a book edition that he's got coming out, the company, Google, provides the FBI and the CIA with unfettered access to users' correspondence, and such access can be obtained without the prosecutor's approval or a court ruling. So more indication coming from Julian Assange that Google is has failed in their motto, which is don't be evil. Well, unfortunately, that's pretty evil, guys, working directly for the State Department. Let's move on to some economic news. Of course, it is Black Friday right now, and people are being trampled all over the country. I'm just guessing. I haven't seen any videos yet, but I imagine the videos will be forthcoming later on today, and we'll probably see the wonderment that is the greed of the United States. It's only in America that you can take a day off to give thanks for everything you have and then spend the next day beating up other people to try and get plastic crap from China. Man, I love this country. So glad to be a part of it. I'm not trying to knock the whole country, just those of you people out there who have completely lost your minds. Let's move on. Economy right now. The Dow is up currently about 60 points. So there we go. Happy days still here. Gold taking a little bit of a dip, down about $15 to $1,182. Silver following suit, down almost 5% to $1,578. And the big move right now, after OPEC decided that they would not increase their production at the meeting yesterday, oil prices have fallen fairly dramatically, down almost 7% this morning. With a barrel of crude right now below $70 at $68.95, should start transforming again into lower gas rates at the pumps. But OPEC deciding they are not going to cut production levels to stem the collapse of oil prices. Obviously, they've fallen about 40% since June alone. And as a result of that, the benchmark crude oil prices plummeted in London after the meeting. Brent crude sinking 6.2% to $69.11 a barrel. We just mentioned it's lower than that now. And then June, the prices were high or as high as $115 a barrel. And oil prices right now are at their lowest level since September of 2010, partly in due to an oversupply, lower demand, and a boom in North American production. I think most likely what it is that OPEC is trying to crush Iran and Russia by making it more difficult for them to make a profit on the oil that they are pumping out of the ground. This is a USA Today article, so they're not going to talk about some of the geopolitical aspects going on. But that, I think, you could take to the bank as being what is going on. And consumers right now paying about $2.80 for a gallon of gas, down about 49 cents a gallon from 2 years ago. So that's kind of some good news, I guess, if you're into pumping gas and driving around. Walmart in the news again, not only for the protests that are going on today at about 1,500 locations, but Walmart is going to be taking some heat on this one because they're doing the same thing they did last year, which is ask their own associates to dig deep into their low-wage pockets and to give to one another. An Oklahoma City Walmart is asking employees to donate food to help their coworkers make ends meet during the holiday season, according to a photo posted by the labor-backed coalition Making Change at Walmart. A sign on the collection bid reads, "Let's succeed by donating to associates in need." And in 2013, the same thing happened at a Walmart in Canton, Ohio. Now, technically, the food drives are not Walmart corporate policy, so hey, it's all forgiven, right? But a Walmart spokesman did characterize the Ohio effort as part of the company's culture to rally around associates and take care of them when they face extreme hardships. And Walmart checked because, you know, it cares. And the Oklahoma food drive is apparently just for two associates who don't have health insurance because Walmart doesn't provide it to any of its hourly workers. So it's not like the whole store is starving or anything. Just these two associates, I guess, in Oklahoma. So there you go. And who wants to subsidize freeloaders with our hard-earned tax dollars anyway? Oh, wait a minute. Actually, Walmart itself hauls in monster truckloads of public assistance for itself. These days, low daily wages are subsidized by your taxes. The company's low wages leave huge numbers of its employees on public assistance programs such as food stamps and Medicaid. And by one estimate, a single Walmart superstore requires up to $1.7 million in public assistance spending every single year. And the company itself eats up total public assistance of $6.2 billion a year. That's how Walmart can quote unquote afford to pay its employees so little. And yet they don't, it's a wonder that they don't pass out from hunger in the aisles during the Black Friday, debacle that's going on. We'll just use the word debacle there. But Walmart does love its food stamps just as much, or if not more than just fodder to feed the work animals. Walmart loves selling the stuff to the food stamp people of America, and they sell a whole lot of stuff. How much profit does Walmart actually make from public assistance? Well, 1 year, 9 Walmart supercenters in Massachusetts received more than $33 million in SNAP dollars. That's a lot of money. In 2 years, Walmart received about half of the $1 billion in SNAP expenditures in the entire state of Oklahoma. And overall, 18% of all food benefits money is spent at Walmart. That translates to about $14 billion a year. But maybe all hope is not lost because protesters left a huge food bin outside of Walmart heiress Alice Walton's $25 million Manhattan condo. And Alice, of course, has a net worth of about $35 billion, and she made $100 million this past year, so it's nice to know that she'll be doing okay this Thanksgiving. Perhaps she'll dig into some of those very deep pockets and do something for the employees of Walmart. Probably not worth holding your breath on that one. So, Kiev has shut down the banking system in the rebel-held eastern part of Ukraine. The cash machines there have stopped working, And as of Wednesday, businesses are no longer accepting credit cards after the authorities in Kiev moved to shut down the banking system. Ukraine's central bank on Tuesday ordered all the banks to suspend their operations in the rebel-held part of a push by Kiev to isolate the separatist regions. This is something you would do before you are going to go in with a major ground assault. Just a heads up to the people in eastern Ukraine right now. This is laying the groundwork for war, guys. And the move followed a November 14th decree by President Poroshenko that also pulled the plug on all social services like schools and hospitals in the towns under the insurgent control. In Donetsk, where shelling between government forces and rebels rumbled on in the outlying districts, the vast majority of businesses say their credit card systems are no longer working. The central bank has said that banking services will only be restored in the areas when they come back under Ukrainian control, which is an unlikely scenario as the Kremlin-backed rebels have solidified their power. And a lot of people are unaware, but more than 4,300 people have been killed and more than 1 million displaced by the 7 months of brutal fighting between the government forces and the insurgents. 1 million people displaced. Why are we not talking about this on the news every single day? Well, it's because these are white people that live in townhouses with better internet than us, guys. That's why it's difficult to get humanitarian, fomented humanitarian crisis type emotions fomented behind people that we would relate to so well. So especially with us, the United States and NATO being responsible for the junta in Kiev, we absolutely cannot make those people look like the bad guys now, because we would be making ourselves look like the bad guys now. But 1 million people have been displaced in eastern Ukraine. That is a staggering, staggering number, bigger than the amount of people who were displaced in Gaza over the summer under the onslaught of Israel. Just unbelievable, and nobody wants to talk about it. Okay, we'll move right along then. Germany, in the news right now, saying that they'd like to go ahead and avoid ruining Russia's economy with sanctions. They are saying now, and this is, of course, according to the German Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier. He said that the economic measures are taking a toll on Russia, and so the EU probably doesn't need to intensify them. Instead, he's saying that Germany might take lead in negotiations aimed at defusing the 8-month conflict. Because he says an economically isolated Russia, one that may face collapse, would obviously not improve security in Europe or in the Ukraine, but would essentially pose a danger to itself and to others. And one of the problems is that many people aren't having a dialogue, and he's saying that's not true of the Germans. So perhaps the Germans are going to step up and start eliminating some of these sanctions against Russia, probably because they are so close to Russia and realize that the implosion of Russia is going to negatively affect everybody. So moving on again, everybody is watching the Swiss referendum on Sunday. We will find out Monday what happened, I am sure. But there is going to be a Swiss referendum on whether or not to repatriate a whole bunch of its gold, and then also change the rules for its central bank, which would make it a requirement for the central bank to have 20% of its reserves in gold. What's that going to do to the price of gold and the demand of gold? Well, we don't really know. We don't really know which way the wind is going to blow on that one yet, so we will see. But I would expect some moves one way or the other in the gold market on Monday as a result of that Swiss referendum. In other gold news, the French political leaders are now wanting their gold back in France. Isn't it amazing how many countries are now stepping up and saying, you know, I don't really want our gold spread all over. I think I'd rather have it someplace where we could actually look at it. So that's what's going on in France right now. They could be the next on the list of countries that want to take its gold back if the leader of a far right-wing political party has her way. And on Tuesday, Marine Le Pen, who is the founder and leader of the Front National Party of France, who is also the front runner to potentially be France's new president, she penned an open letter in French to Christian Neuer, who is a governor of the Bank of France, requesting that the country's gold holdings be repatriated back to France. She basically says that the monetary institution that you lead has historically served as a reserve central bank for France's monetary and gold reserves. In our strategic and sovereign vision, these do not belong to the state nor the Bank of France, but to the French people, which serve as the ultimate guarantee of French debt and our money. Wow. Isn't that amazing? A leader saying that the people themselves serve as the ultimate guarantee of public debt and money, which is 100% accurate. She also says, not only does she want to see the gold come back into France, but she also recommended that the central bank take advantage of the recent price drop and buy more gold, boosting their reserves by another 20%. She's also recommending that the central bank never sells its gold reserves in the future. And as a third and final condition or request that she's got, she'd asked that an independent body be allowed to audit the country's current holdings of 2,400 metric tons. So more countries across the world attempting to repatriate their gold. I think that the writing is on the wall in terms of things. You know, these leaders, they know what's going on. They know this BRIC bank thing is going to come to fruition. They know that the United States world reserve currency is probably going to go by the wayside, and they probably need to have some pretty substantial gold reserves to bolster this, you know, bolster themselves against the storm that is most likely coming. So I think that we will see more countries in the future following suit and attempting to repatriate all of their gold. Moving into the science and technology department, which is my favorite department here, the largest sunspot ever to appear on Earth's nearest star in more than two decades. Is once again pointed at the planet, and it will likely kickstart solar storms, according to NASA scientists yesterday. The massive sunspot, previously known as Active Region 12192, was turned towards the Earth back in October and early November, but it rotated out of view. While it was on the Earth-facing side of the sun, the sunspot did not produce any coronal mass ejections, which are hot bursts of material ejected into space at 4 million miles per hour, all of which have the potential to damage satellites and power grids. But now the active region has rotated back around, and it is facing Earth once again. And although the sunspot has shrunken in size, it will likely be disruptive, according to NASA scientist Holly Gilbert. The AR-12192 has been renamed AR-12209 now, and that it is once again on the Earth-facing side of the sun. The sunspot was out of view, as I said, for about 2 weeks. It is still large enough right now for 10 whole Earths to fit inside of it, and in terms of size, it ranks 33rd largest of the 32,908 active regions first recorded since 1874, and it's the largest sunspot recorded since 1990. So, potential there that we could have a major coronal mass ejection, which could obviously disrupt satellite communications and the power grid here on Earth. We dodged the bullet last time, but we will see what happens this time. Just something to be aware of out there. I want to draw your attention, because now it is after Thanksgiving. So what did I do last night, ladies and gentlemen? I don't really hate to admit it. I listen to Christmas carols. I put on classical jazz Christmas music because I flippin' love Christmas. It's my favorite time of year. It's the only time people are actually nice to each other out there, and I love it. So part of my tech story development for the next month may or may not include potential Christmas gift hint ideas. I'm just going to lay that out there in case, you know, somebody might out there be thinking, what would JD or Robert or Fletch might be like for Christmas? I don't know. So I'm laying some of these stories out. This next story may or may not be related to that story, but there is a new radio controlled carbon fiber glider. It looks exactly like an airplane that you would fold out of paper, but it is made out of carbon fiber and virtually indestructible, and it is radio controlled from an app on your phone. It is about the coolest thing I've seen in a long time. There's a Kickstart campaign for it right now, but this thing flies all over the place, super cool, outside. You can run it into a wall 1,000 times. They're not very far away from tooling up. This is the same company that brought the PowerUp 3.0, which some of you guys might know about, which was essentially just a standalone motor that you could insert into a paper airplane and then control your paper airplane from your phone. I mean, how cool is that? Well, they've decided to up the ante quite a bit and turn the paper into 100% carbon fiber, and it's not like a printed carbon fiber decal that they put. They've actually created a plane that you can fly around in your house made out of carbon fiber. There might or might not be people here affiliated with Red Pill that might want those for Christmas. So just laying that out there again. We'll get away from that story. Twitter in the news today as they have started now peeking at the other apps on your phone. Twitter, hungry for new data to fuel its targeted advertising division, will start looking at what other apps its users have downloaded. Starting just Wednesday this week, the company will begin collecting data on which other apps the users have on their iOS and Android smartphones. The data, Twitter says, will help it deliver better tailored content to its users, which are obviously sure to include ads, but may also be better recommendations about whom to follow and when users sign up, or more relevant first tweets in the feed, which could help Twitter hook people more early. It's strictly a list of the apps, according to Twitter, not data pertaining to what people do inside of those apps. So Twitter might essentially know that you have a ride-hailing app, but it wouldn't see how many rides you've actually taken with the app. And Twitter is not the only company that collects this sort of data. Other major internet companies like Google and Facebook do it under certain circumstances. And Facebook, if a developer has integrated its software kit, might use that data for mobile app ads also. Although Twitter's move may actually raise some privacy concerns, at least among some people, perhaps depending on which other apps are on their phones. And Twitter's data collection will start automatically unless users have already turned on the built-in limit ad tracking or opt out of internet-based ads option in iOS or Android phones, respectively. So there are options to turn this feature off, but Twitter users will be notified of the data collection, but you can turn it off at any time from your app settings. And Twitter says if the user does turn it off, the data is actually removed from the Twitter servers. So are they just saying that to be nice? Who really knows? Difficult to say. Flying robots, always cool and in the news, but this time planning on being servers in a restaurant in Singapore by the end of next year. Infinium Serve, which is the autonomous flying robot waiters, they're going to be first launched in one of the Timber Group's 5 outlets in Singapore. So these are essentially robot serving waiters. Pretty cool. Going to be coming to a restaurant in Singapore near you by the end of next year. Very cool. I like that. The global websites yesterday, this is kind of a big story, including Dell, Microsoft, Ferrari, and the humanitarian organization UNICEF, all targeted by the Syrian Electronic Army yesterday. Syrian Electronic Army was able to redirect users of many, many, many sites to a page that they posted. They didn't actually steal any information or anything like that, so nobody's data was compromised at any of those major companies. But there were screenshots going up showing essentially the blocking of those pages by the Syrian Electronic Army. So more large-scale hacking going on across the country. Moving into some health news real quick. There's been a very startling report coming out of Japan about the electronic cigarettes, and this is not the same report that we had the other day saying that they could potentially affect your computers because they are absolutely all USB chargeable, these electronic cigarettes. But now a study in Japan says that electronic cigarettes contain up to 10 times more cancer-causing substances than regular tobacco. So a team from the Japanese Health Ministry examined the vapor, finding carcinogens like formaldehyde and acetaldehyde. And the former was found in quantities exceeding traditional cigarettes by 10 times. They go on to say, especially when the wire, which is used to vaporize the liquid, gets overheated, a higher amount of those harmful substances can be produced. So if you're one of those people out there using the e-cigarettes, I'm just saying I'm not promoting smoking. Please don't just give up the e-cigarette and go back to tobacco because you find it to be safer. But do be aware that not only now is there some health concerns related to the e-cigarettes, but there's also some tech concerns. We went over that yesterday. A lot of these e-cigarettes coming out of China have been affected or infected with viruses at a root level. We'll take over your computer and then report back to the people in China what exactly you are doing. So that is an important piece of information to know. Let's move on to some other stuff here. A new report, probably not news for anyone here, coming from GreenMed Info, talking about the idea that vaccines, well, they pretty much don't work. The malignant mumps in the MMR-vaccinated children, there's been a new study which is provocatively titled The Epidemic of Complicated Mumps in Previously Vaccinated Young Adults in the Southwest of France. It reveals essentially that the MMR vaccine, despite generating high rates of presumably protective IgG antibodies against mumps, does not always translate to real-world immunity against infections, as we have already reported and have been told, and this is again coming from GreenMed Info. To the contrary, this new study details cases where, despite the detection of high levels of antibodies against mumps virus, patients contracted a malignant form of mumps that only rarely follows from natural community-acquired infections. So while it's counterintuitive to those who uncritically accept the official marketing copy of the vaccine industry and their cheerleaders within the government and mainstream media, the research community and general public is finally beginning to accept and appreciate how prevalent and well-documented vaccine failure really is, especially in the cases of measles, hepatitis B, chickenpox, pertussis, HIV, polio, HPV, and influenza vaccines. They don't work. And I'll tell you, the whole concept behind vaccines is completely lost on me, because the argument effectively is you need to get your non-vaccinated kid vaccinated so that it doesn't affect my kid who is vaccinated. That is a logical fallacy. It doesn't make any sense. So how can me giving my kid God only knows what from a company whose business model is built on the fact that they want people to stay unwell? Why would I allow them or consent to allowing the states to force me to put toxic chemicals or potentially toxic chemicals into my kids? I cannot even imagine. And, the main argument is you got to do it because my vaccinated kid could get sick if you don't. And it doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. So don't vaccinate your kids, guys. Just be smart. Don't put poison in your kids. That's all I'm saying. Some other health news. There were some 4 polio vaccinators were shot dead in Pakistan. Gunmen opened fire on a team of polio vaccinators in Pakistan's restive southwest on Wednesday, killing 4 of them, obviously stemming from the idea that these militants believe that the polio vaccination is a cover for espionage or a Western conspiracy to sterilize Muslims. And that has been indicated by a lot of reports. So that is what has happened in Pakistan. We are pretty much out of time for the news today. There's a lot of really good stuff still left untouched. Please do go to the website and check out the show section for today. We're going to take another quick 3-minute break. And when we come back, Chris Geo will be joining us. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of interesting things. Very much looking forward to this conversation. Keep it right here, guys. This is your daily dose of deprogramming. We will be right back. Thanks.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine.
including all heavy metals.
We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine now. Only at hempusa.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The Wicked Ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is straight up 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live just like we are every day, Monday through Friday. And I cannot thank you guys enough, those of you who are joining us for the first time. We really appreciate you guys giving us a shot. And those of you who have tuned in on a daily basis to make this part of your daily dose of deprogramming, cannot thank you guys enough, because without you, I would essentially just be sitting here talking to my cat. And I'll tell you again, he has heard it all. And he is not bothered by any of it anymore, because he just chases sunspots around and bugs me about turkey. I think that's going to be the theme for the weekend. Anyway, getting back into the broadcast today, super duper excited to be joined by Chris Geo once again. Chris, first of all, thank you very much for joining us again on short notice today.
Oh, my pleasure, man. I had a great time on the last show, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
Me too. Now, again, for those of you guys who weren't here with us last time, we had a pretty in-depth discussion about interdimensional exploration, about ayahuasca, and about exploring the depths of the collective consciousness and of your own consciousness. And I got a little flack. I'm not going to lie. I got a little flack from people saying, you know, this is supposed to be more of a news-oriented show. It's not really what Red Pill is about. And I had to counter that and say, you know, getting through the matrix is what this show is about, figuring out exactly what has been happening to us and learning how to get out of it. And I'll tell you, to me, interdimensional exploration is one of the most important ways for all of us to figure out exactly what is going on a spiritual level. And until you have that spiritual realization, I think it's hard to break out of the matrix. Don't you agree, Chris?
Until we change ourselves, we're never going to change anything in the outside world. Because let's say we have a violent revolution like they're trying to have down in Ferguson right now, and we manage to overthrow the government. Well, what happens if we don't change ourselves and our spirits and our perspective? Then we're just going to replace it with the exact same evil that corrupted the current system. So I think that's why it's so important to really focus on the self, the spirit, and the spiritual evolution and consciousness shift of mankind, because that is definitely key right there.
I agree. I completely agree. And I promise today we're going to keep it a little bit more in this dimension, because there's so much going on in the news that I would really like to get your impression on, Chris. But for those of you guys out there who are new to the network or new to the show who don't know who Chris is, Chris Geo is a veteran broadcaster. He's somebody who's been in this business for a long time and actually has a syndicated show over on GCN. He's also the program director for Truth Frequency Radio and was nice enough to give my crew here at Red Pill Reports a shot, you know, a wild stab in the dark and letting us take over a radio show. And we cannot tell you guys how much we appreciate Chris just in general. But also, in terms of his personal life, the wealth of knowledge that this gentleman has got, everything from geopolitics and eugenics, economy to ancient history, things like that, the occult. I mean, we're talking about diverse. And that's why I really do look forward to these phone calls when we get to have them, Chris. But I want to come back to some of the things that are happening right now in our country. There's so much turmoil going on. But to me, it all comes down to media manipulation. There seems to be this history in our country of really guiding the popular, you know, the popular culture and the popular perception of what's going on. And we just had this report just, you know, right before you came on, and you mentioned it to me before the break or during the break, so I wanted to talk about it with this this e-cigarette thing. A lot of conjecture going back and forth. Are they safe? Are they not safe? Where do you think all that conjecture stems from, Chris?
Well, there are some manufacturers in China that are producing these things with very dangerous chemicals, so I do understand that. Mm-hmm. However, most e-cigarette users, including myself, we make our own vapor, so we know exactly what goes in it. And it's important to note that cigarettes have 550 different types of chemicals, including, as you mentioned, formaldehyde and arsenic and several other things to make them even more addictive.
Right.
When you're dealing with e-cigarettes, when you make them yourself, you're dealing with four chemicals and that's it, and that is nicotine, which is not very dangerous in itself. As a matter of fact, they've done studies that show that nicotine actually improves brain activity, and that's why you see artists, talk show hosts, authors all smoking, and you've seen that throughout history because it's just something natural that provokes the brain functions. Huh. Now, I'm not promoting that anybody goes out there and gets hooked on nicotine, because trust me, it's a very, very hard addiction to break, and it's something that I haven't even been able to break. But at the very least, I'm not smoking cigarettes anymore, and I feel much better. I can breathe a lot better, and the costs have really gone down. I spend about $300 a year on e-cigarette products because I make my own. And so for the liquid, I can make it for a liter for about $75, and that lasts me a full year. And then I go through maybe about 10 batteries at about $15 a piece. And that's only because I travel a lot. So I tend to break the batteries as I'm traveling. But the normal person can use two or three batteries and it'll last them a whole year, if not more. And then the cartridges. I like to change out the cartridges every once in a while. So I'll go through maybe 30 to 50 cartridges in the year. That costs about $75. So, and they don't smell. And it's gotten to the point now where when I see somebody that smokes, I'm not a smoking Nazi, and I refuse to be a smoking Nazi because I smoked for 20 years, and so if people were willing to put up with me, then I have to put up with other people. Right. But I can legitimately smell now how bad these cigarettes smell, and I go, oh my God, I can't believe I used to smell like that. I'll never say anything because I did it for 20 years, but it just goes to show. All of this seems to be a push by the tobacco industry because they're losing buckets full of buttloads of money, however you want to phrase that. But they're losing quite a bit of money on this, and people are taking the initiative themselves to quit smoking. I mean, if this is helping people quit smoking, more power to them. I'm just tired of this media manipulation and trying to get people back on those cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Or even the very fact that some people just don't like to see people having a good time, because before I can understand that cigarettes smell, and so they didn't want cigarettes smoked, inside of places. But now people are using e-cigarettes. They have no smell to them whatsoever, and people are still sitting back and going, my God, they're using the e-cigarettes in public.
Right.
It's like, okay, now we've just gotten to a point where you don't want to see people having a good time or enjoying themselves. That's what it comes down to. So thank you for that, Rand.
Well, I feel the same way, and I'll admit also that I was a smoker for a very long time, not 20 years, but probably 10. And I consider myself still to be a smoker, even though I don't really smoke cigarettes with any kind of habitual. I liken it to alcoholism. Like, if you're an alcoholic and you quit drinking, you're still an alcoholic. You're going to be an alcoholic forever. Cigarettes are that strong to me. So for me to hear somebody able to, A, get out from under, underneath such a blindingly ridiculous addiction like cigarettes, and do something which potentially could be more healthy with the e-cigarette, I have to support that. But it's still at the same time, I don't know enough about where people are getting their materials. And plus, we had the story about the USB portion of them possibly infecting your computers. So you actually have two threats that the media seems to be hyping quite a bit right now. But it makes sense with what you're saying, because there was an article that came out yesterday, I think from the National Institute of Health, that said that only 18% of Americans are actual cigarette smokers these days, which is the lowest number that it's been in a very, very, very long time. So I guess, yeah, if you're a part of the tobacco lobby, you might want to start promoting some negative aspects to the e-cigarette thing. And I think that's probably what you're indicating is going on.
That is what we're seeing. I smoke in airports. I've smoked at hospitals before. Not smoking cigarettes, vaped. And nobody says anything to me. And, I don't make a big spectacle out of it. I'll go in a corner somewhere, take a couple of puffs, and that's that. But why not? I mean, we've created a technology here that is like having your cake and eating it too. For anybody that likes to smoke, because I genuinely like to smoke, mm-hmm. It's like having your cake and eating it too, and you're not bothering anybody. That's what it's all about. You have the right to do whatever you want in this world as long as you're not hurting somebody else. And with cigarettes, it is arguable that, okay, the secondhand smoke can cause cancer. So now we have a situation to where you're legitimately not hurting anybody else.
Mm-hmm. And yet people are going to be up in arms about it. That's just the nature of Americans, though, I think. They don't like seeing, if you're getting a privilege that they don't have, they're not going to like it. That's just
there's two kinds of people in this world, and that's those who want to be left alone and those who won't leave them alone.
Yes. Oh, well said. Well said. Okay, well, let's talk generally then about this whole media manipulation thing. I'm kind of the opinion. I don't know if you heard the first hour broadcast, but I had to kind of go on a mini rant about some of the information that the prosecuting attorneys gave to the grand jury in the Ferguson situation. Did you hear that, or have you?
I did hear that, yes.
Okay.
And everything is upside down, and it's like when Erwin Schiff was in court fighting the IRS, the judge basically told him, the law doesn't apply in my courtroom. The law is what I say it is.
Uh-huh.
And that's the type of situation that we have all up and down the line. So it's very, very dangerous because we are dealing with lawless criminals here who don't follow the law. You can have a Supreme Court ruling that says one thing. Let's take Brown versus Texas, for instance, that says that you can't stop somebody just for the sake of IDing them. It was a 1970-something ruling, yet we still have stop and identify statute all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
How is this happening? I remember hearing all these stories coming out of New York and just thinking to myself, this is a complete and utter, not only violation of the Fourth Amendment, but also a violation of Supreme Court rulings. Mm-hmm. Yet they're still getting away with this.
What is it? What is it you think that allows them to get away with it? Is it just people's not being aware that that's, you know, against the rules, or is it just complacency? What do you think?
Complacency, absolutely. When you have the majority of people doing something, even if it's unlawful, then that's pretty much the way society is going to work. So they're able to step on a couple of people's civil liberties. If nobody makes a fuss out of it, they'll do more and more and more and more until it just becomes the way it's always been.
Right.
There was an experiment that they did, excuse me, and there's a YouTube video called Five Monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
And in this experiment, they put a banana up in the middle, and they would spray the monkeys every time somebody would go for the banana. They would spray all the monkeys with water.
Right.
And so they removed one monkey and put another one in when the other monkey was trying to go for the banana. Rather than getting sprayed, the whole group started attacking them.
Right.
And as they removed every one of the monkeys, and then there was a whole new set of five monkeys who had never been sprayed by water, they would still attack anybody that tried to go for the banana because that's the way it's always been.
Isn't that amazing how quickly conditioning can take over?
Yes, yes. And it's very scary. But that's why people like us have to stand up, and we have to remind our children what it's like to be free, because those of us who have children, I'm not one of them, but those people out there who have children that are 10 years old, 12 years old, you know, born after 9/11 or started going to school after 9/11, they don't know what it's like to go to school without cameras. They don't know what it's like to go to school without being monitored, without having to go through metal detectors, without having to get strip searched at the airport. They don't know what freedom is like, and it's up to us to teach them.
Well, and the other important lesson to teach them, too, is that freedoms, you never get your freedoms back incrementally. You only lose them incrementally. It's going to take a revolution to get them all back officially, you know, but they're going to continue to chip away and chip away and chip away. And as they're able to do that and create a precedent, well, it strikes me because there are people out there that are starting to wake up to this, and people are starting to understand the law. I saw a fantastic video yesterday from a rapper down in Memphis, right? So this guy's coming out of his house, and there are two sheriff's deputies there, and the sheriff's deputies had pulled over on the side of the road because there were two guys standing on this guy's porch, friends of his. One of them was his wife's brother, so his brother-in-law, and then one of his friends. And the police came right up, and they said, well, who are you guys, and why are you standing on this porch? We want your IDs. And this guy had to come out and say, first of all, you're on my property without a warrant. Second of all, you don't have any right to ask these guys for IDs because you haven't told us that they're suspected of committing a crime, which is what you need to do to be able to ID these guys.
Very versus Ohio, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And these cops wanted to argue. They're saying, you know, we're going to detain you. We have the right to detain you. And I just wonder, you know, what is it going to take to get the shift to really happen? Are we going to have to see more events like Ferguson, do you think? I just can't figure out how we're going to get out of this mess, Chris.
Well, I think we are seeing the consciousness shift right now, but we also have an element of apathy because of the pharmaceutical industry. They've pretty much doped everybody up, and so people can't feel that there's something wrong. But then all other people are just going along to get along. And that's the most dangerous type of mentality, because if it's more convenient for you to give your identification to a police officer than it is to stand on your rights, well, that's the norm that we're going to create as a society, and that's the norm we have created. I was arrested by DHS back in 2011, and I was covering a story, and his reason for arresting me was because I refused to give my identification. Well, that violates, as we said, Brown versus Texas. It also violates Terry versus Ohio, because he had no reasonable suspicion that I was committing a crime. And it violates the Fourth Amendment as well. And so, but he really thought in his mind that he was doing the right thing and that he had the legal authority to do so, even so much to write in the police report, I arrested this individual for refusing to show his identification. So as soon as I sent it to the prosecutor's office, I sent a motion for dismissal to the prosecutor's office and also to the federal court. They threw it out instantly because they knew there was a lawsuit on their hands if they proceeded. And I mean, I could have taken him to court. I could have made a big deal out of it, but you have to pick your battles. So there is an element of picking your battles. And it was either me tied up in the court system suing them, and then they sent every other three-letter agency after me, or continue doing what I'm doing at TFR and continue to build and get an even bigger message out, which I did. But the experience was fantastic to me, to my personal growth. But it just goes to show how even the police officers, they really believe that they're operating under the law, and they really believe that they have a right to just grab somebody and just ID somebody. There's not even a law that you have to carry an identification. Yeah, so absolutely. That's the first thing. Is there a law that I have to even carry an identification?
Is there a law that says I have to have a name? How about that? How about what you guys are asking me for is would be considered in a court of law to be not even admissible? Because what is a state ID? Well, where does the state get that information from when they make that piece of plastic? They get it from me. I could be telling them anything, and they could print it on a piece of plastic, and all of a sudden now that's, you know, the law of the land. There's not even a law that says I have to have a name, let alone have to go and give $25 to a state organization so that they can print some fake piece of plastic with my picture on it, which is all conjecture anyway, you know?
It's absolutely, but they have to have that identification in order to make contact with you, in order to pull you into that system. So the minute you give them that identification, that's it. Now, when you're driving a car, that's different. I don't agree with the way the law is written, but the law is written to where you have to give them your driver's license if you're driving a car. So we're talking about two different things here. I don't want anybody to go out and try to use this while they're driving and then find out that the laws are written to the contrary.
And it's I have to interject there, because I disagree on that particular front, because there's very, very rarely that anybody is actually out there driving or operating a vehicle. Both the word driver and operator carry with them a very explicit definitions in Black's Law's Dictionary. A driver is somebody who uses their car to transport people or products for sale or profit. They both, drivers and operators, both have to do with commerce. What you are doing when you're driving in your car is not driving. It is, in fact, traveling. And as a traveler, in the common way, you are not obligated to give your ID to a police officer. But
I wholeheartedly,
just like Chris is saying, those guys are armed, and they believe that you are obligated, and they will most likely shoot you if you decide not to give it to them. So it's probably best to give it to them.
You took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was going to say. I totally agree with you 100%, but we are dealing with immature people with guns.
Yeah.
That are also are prone to psychosis.
And potentially medicated heavily or have a military background.
You know, yes.
And there's a lot of those. And that's the thing that when we're talking about Ferguson, there's a lot of alternative media people out there right now who are very one-sided, who are just saying, okay, that guy was a thug, he deserved to die, the indictment happened, blah, blah, blah. You know, but nobody's taking into account the fact that those kids in that situation were 100% conditioned to be that way, not only from an education standpoint, from the materials that are put into their community by the CIA called crack, the music industry ganging up on them to promote the gangster mentality, right? You have conditioning that has taken place, and I find it very difficult to blame these kids who are in that position. And on the same note, if you take police officers who are undereducated or potentially drugged for, depression or whatever it is, and you give them a military costume and you give them military weapons and you put them in military vehicles, is there any wonder that they're going to turn? I mean, it's the same. It's conditioning on both sides being turned against each other. And I think that was the whole motive behind this whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. They tried it with the Trayvon Martin thing and it didn't work. Uh-huh. So now they managed to get it done with the Ferguson situation. But I've posed this question over the last year. When is enough enough? And this was when I was really looking into the police brutality and the police state news on a daily basis. And I had to take a step back and remove myself because it was changing my emotional state. It was changing my spirit. Because there does come a point to where we have to say enough is enough. And a peaceful revolution is impossible, then violent revolution is inevitable. But we saw in Thailand and other places where the protesters will literally throw Molotov cocktails at the police, set these people on fire. I mean, this stuff that was happening in Greece in 2008, you can just Google pictures and you see police on fire. These people do not play.
Yeah.
And as a result, like in Thailand, for instance, the police finally lay down their shields and join the protesters. Mm-hmm. So it does come to a point of violence, and there is that line in the sand that you have to draw that's for each individual to draw their own line. But as a society, where is that line? That's the $50 million question. Where is that line? I don't ever want to see it come down to that, but they keep pushing and pushing and pushing. You kill one too many dogs. You kill one too many babies. You kill one too many wives and children and everything that the police are doing. And then you try to put these police on investigation and or, you know, bring charges against them. And the police flat out tell you, we are operating under standard policy. This is our procedure. So the officer did nothing wrong when he shot your dog. That tells me that they've declared war against the people.
Oh, I agree. And to me, it's not about how many dogs they kill or how many children they kill. It's about, when are they going to kill the wrong one? When are they going to kill that one where some guy's just like, okay, I'm done. We're taking out the whole police department. And that's what I think is going to happen. You know, I've got friends of mine, and if you go to their house and you shoot their dog, you're not going to make it off their property. I mean, we're here in rural Missouri, and granted, stuff like that doesn't really happen around here very often because all the law enforcement here is very community oriented. But I cannot even imagine the idea that they are pushing these triggers and they're pushing them and pushing them and pushing them, that there's not going to be some kind of, you know, national fight back. I was watching a video just yesterday about some of the rioting that's going on in the Ukraine right now. And I'm telling you, these people have it figured out. These guys, the police put up large metal barricades to block off a street. And these are big, heavy-duty metal barricades bolted together in a line, and all the police were behind it. You know what the Ukrainians did? They showed up with a backhoe. They drove right up to that barricade. They put that bucket down, and they knocked that whole thing over. And it would have taken a backhoe. You couldn't have knocked it over with, you know, a couple hundred people.
See, there weren't 50 or 60 of them sitting down and just getting pepper sprayed by
exactly.
One police officer. When I saw that video, it was disgusting. It was at some university.
Yeah.
50, 60 people sitting in a line just getting pepper sprayed.
It's just disgusting. It's disgusting. I mean, I'm right there with you. I remember seeing that video, and I had to get up from my desk because I have a propensity to scream at my computer when I see stuff like that. There's another video on YouTube right now called Call the Cops, and it's like a rap video, but it shows all of the instances of people being just absolutely massacred by police officers. And I'm, again, you know, we're not sitting here saying all police officers are bad. We know that there are constitutional attorney or constitutional sheriffs.
No. I have to jump in for just a moment.
Okay.
Because anybody who pulls people over with a gun and demands money from them is a bad person.
I
don't care.
I agree. I 100% agree with that. And I was just going to say, I know there are constitutional sheriffs out there whose main focus is not that, is people who understand that you're protecting your minority rights is something that was codified in our country. That's what liberty is about. And there are people out there that do the right job. But I completely agree with you that there is no such thing as a good law enforcement officer if your job is to go out and to extort fake Federal Reserve notes from people to say essentially that the state or the county is a victim of a crime, where the state or the county, which, mind you, are creations of the minds of men, okay, they only exist in the minds of men, are somehow have more rights than I do. That's essentially what's going on. And they're saying, you know, you ran that stop sign and you didn't want to give us $15, so now we're going to come to your house and we're going to attempt to kidnap you and put you in a cage. And if you don't want to go into a cage, we're going to shoot you. And that's policy. So we're totally
exactly.
Fine with that. That is oppression. I mean, there's no getting around that. I fully 100% am on board with that. And that's why I think all law enforcement officers need to be replaced with voluntary peace officers. I think we could change the system overnight and put the right people in play and make a big splash.
A person you should interview is Nathan Frazier. He does Live Free FM here on Truth Frequency on Sundays, but he's right in line with a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. As a matter of fact, he's the person that I learned most of these philosophies and understandings from. So, yeah, definitely have him on sometime.
Okay. Have you heard of Dale Brown from his threat, what is it, the threat management team in Detroit? Have you heard of him at all?
No, I haven't.
This is somebody that everybody needs to be paying attention to right now. So this guy, Dale Brown, he runs the Threat Management Center, is what it's called, in Detroit. And he is it's a private police department. It's a completely private. They're all individual citizens. And what he did is he went out into the community. He got grants from community members to put police officers into apartment complexes. So there were actually police that were community-oriented living in apartment complexes. And he gives his guys every tool in the book to deal with something without violence. And the entire organization is based on the idea of eliminating the environmental causes of violent activity by being, pro people and being out on a street type beat. And the guy has got an impeccable record. And I know this is a side note, but Dale Brown, man, if you haven't checked out the Threat Management Center in Detroit, this to me is one of the best solutions I've ever seen. And his record there stands to say that also. It's just amazing to see, actual community-oriented policing and how that can have an effect on a community.
There are some people in this world that make me feel like we do have to have some kind of police force. When you are looting a dollar store, mm-hmm. you need to be governed.
Yes, I completely agree with that.
Dollar store. I have some class at least. Loot a Best Buy. Loot a Macy's. Loot some. A dollar store. Come on.
Well, and to me, that whole thing seemed to be completely contrived. And, Melissa, Melissa Melton from True Stream, right, also with a show on your network, she did a great video talking about the announcement, what the disparities in the announcement when the actual prosecutor McCullough was saying, we're not going to indict him. Didn't make that announcement until 26 minutes past the hour, but at 9:01, USA Today had the story already up, no indictment, which means to me, Michael Brown's parents would have already known, right? So why is then Michael Brown's parents after the thing getting all teary-eyed and yelling about burning the place down on TV? I mean, the whole thing to me seems to be scripted. I don't know. Okay, we got to go to a 3-minute break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the media manipulation. I want to ask you also, Chris, about this Operation Mountain Guardian because I have no idea what it is. So stick with us, guys. 3-minute break, your daily dose of deep programming. We'll be right back.
So you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear. Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Ironbird.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want.
Ever since our Google Plus integration, we've seen a 30% reduction in racist and bigoted comments. People are even starting to notice the complete lack of bigoted comments, and frankly, they miss them. To make up for this deficit, we have added auto-commenting bots to YouTube Plus that can be set to either type racist or hateful comments. Similar to the auto-comment bot, we've created the auto-spam bot, which allows terrible YouTubers to beg people to watch their horrible excuses for videos they put out. These comments can go out to every video they've ever interacted with.
Hey guys! So we're like really wanting to be filmmakers on YouTube, and we'd totes appreciate it if you come watch our videos and comment, like, and subscribe. That'd be totes amazeballs. Yeah, we really like subscribers.
YouTube Plus. We own you!
Like a cancer that silently spreads.
Agent for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is 11:30 Central Time right now. We are live, moving into the last segment of our broadcast today. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through the entire show. And we are very excited right now, as usual, to be speaking with Mr. Chris Geo. And Chris, before the break, we were kind of talking about some of the media manipulation that might potentially be surrounding this Ferguson situation. And I don't want to keep harping on the Ferguson situation, but I'm wondering if there are other aspects to this that we haven't considered yet that you are kind of finding suspicious about this Ferguson thing.
Well, we seem to have the same earmarks as we did in Sandy Hook. For instance, the FBI reporting that there were no dead in Newton, Connecticut,
right,
at that time. So here with the Michael Brown situation, there are people who are claiming that Michael Brown actually died a couple of weeks earlier, and he's actually a resident of California, not a resident of Ferguson, Missouri. So, take it for what it's worth, but I can tell you firsthand that they do use crisis actors. I found a crisis actor studio right here in Denver. I did an audition with them and talked about some of the upcoming projects that they have, including the Syria Chronicles. I put it on YouTube at truthfrequencyradio.com. At youtube.com/truthfrequency. You can actually listen to me talking to them about hiring me as a crisis actor.
Are you serious?
Yes. I wanted to prove once and for all that crisis actors do exist. And yes, they do exist.
And so were they able to tell you about some of their planning, the planned events that they have? And were you able to correlate some of those to actual events that happened?
Well, I contacted the Crisis Actor Studio first, and then I contacted DHS after that. And after I got the name of the person at the Crisis Actor Studio and the name of the studio and all that, I called DHS and just kind of said, oh, yeah, I was sent over by so-and-so about the upcoming event. And they said, are you talking about the one at the Denver International Airport?
What?
And I said, oh my God. Yes, that's the one. And they're
yes.
Like, oh, well, here's a name and number for you to call. And I didn't want to go too deep into this layer. And
right.
So I didn't, go too deep, but I've got it all on YouTube. Yeah, absolutely. And as it turns out, they were doing an evacuation drill on the Denver International Airport based around a pandemic. This was pre-Ebola.
Are you
so? So it's problem reaction solution. It goes right back to that Mountain Guardian situation that you were talking about. Mountain Guardian was an operation that they ran here in Denver, Colorado. It was publicized. It's not a conspiracy theory. It involved shootings at Smedley Elementary School, Denver Union Station, Community College of Aurora, Denver International Airport, Sky Ridge Medical Center, University of Colorado Hospital, and there are several other places as well. Now, I remember hearing about this, that they were going to go into this elementary school, and this is pre-Sandy Hook. They were going to go into this elementary school and do a shooting based on a veteran who was off his medication. Wow. And they were traumatizing the hell out of all of these little kids. Right. And at the time, it was, I want to say, September of 2011, I was thinking, that's so weird. When would that ever happen? That would never happen. Well, come next May 2012, I saw the UN gun ban bill that they were trying to push. And I said, oh my God, I know exactly what's going to happen. Here we have Operation Mountain Guardian. So I said on the radio show in May 2012, watch out, because throughout the remainder of the year, if not all the way through 2013 as well, leading up into 2014, we're going to see school shootings. We're going to see shootings at malls. We're going to see shootings all over the place. It's going to be shooting after shooting after shooting. I'm not an oracle. I didn't get this from some, extraterrestrial intelligence or anything like that. I didn't get it from a Ouija board either. I got it by looking at their documents and seeing that they had trained for all these situations. So I know that when they train for something like this, it's going to go live. Sure enough, we had Aurora movie theater. We had Sandy Hook. We had the Elliot Rodger shooting. It was one shooting after another, exactly the way they had planned it here at Operation Mountain Guardian.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the Aurora thing, because I did want to ask if that planning had happened before then. You just mentioned that it had, but nobody has really looked into the Aurora situation. I don't know anybody out there that's really leading, a big-time investigation, but my goodness, what a crazy deal that was. The guy ends up with the same lawyer as McVeigh, right? Ends up completely drugged out of his mind in court, and nobody seemed to want to talk about that. That whole incident to me seemed completely, completely staged.
They practiced that whole operation. They did it at Park Meadows Mall instead of at the mall that it actually took place in Aurora. So we do see that as part of the operation in Operation Mountain Guardian. Now, when I went to go investigate it, because I was living about 12 miles away, when I went to go investigate it, I couldn't get anywhere near the facility. I saw supposed witnesses doing interviews. I tried to get in as media. They said, nope, 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 nobody's coming in, nobody's coming in. And all they had was their crisis actors out there just saying whatever they were saying. And so it's hard to tell if the shooting actually took place, if there were people actually injured in the shooting. I do know for a fact, though, that there were multiple shooters. We do have the 9/11 phone calls and the radio transmissions between the police, and right. We have listened to those, and they are saying we have multiple shooters. I've got one here in this theater. I've got one in this theater. They're wearing military camo gear. They're wearing, they look like SWAT team. And then they arrest this James Holmes guy, who's standing outside completely in a cloud. I mean, he has no idea even where he's at.
Right.
Supposedly dressed like the Joker, but he wasn't even dressed like the Joker. And the story kept changing and changing and changing to where he's a lone gunman, just like we have at every other scene. Sandy Hook as well. They were saying that there were multiple shooters, and then it turned into one shooter. Same with the Elliot Rodger situation. Multiple shooters, then it turned into one shooter.
Right. They pulled a guy out of the woods at Sandy Hook. I mean, that was live on TV. And then they had to backtrack. Oh, sorry,
supposed to talk about that.
Why is that, though? It seems like all of these events have got multiple shooters. Even the event that took place, I can't remember the lady's name, but the African-American lady who was shot dead in her car outside of the White House last year, who was supposedly being controlled by the government and was getting indications, via secret voices in her head to show up at Washington. Melissa Melton, another fantastic discovery by her, put a video up showing a second person in that lady's car. And it always just makes me wonder, if all of these people, they've all got to have handlers, right? I mean, so at some point, you remember the guy who walked the shoe bomber onto the plane. A lot of indications were that somebody got him through security with no visa, and got him on the plane. It seems like all these guys would have handlers, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we even saw it with Tim McVeigh, John Doe number two. Who's John Doe number two? We still don't know to this very day.
Right.
Trade Center bombing 93. I don't know if you remember that situation, but the FBI actually cooked up the bomb, and the handler cooked up the bomb and gave it to this deranged person, who they thought was a deranged person. But as it turns out, he was recording everything and put those recordings out for the public to hear, that the FBI actually had an involvement in that. So it's the same playbook being played out, the same game plan over and over and over again. But people just don't want to believe that our government is actually capable of doing that. Most of our audience knows, and most people in our circle knows, but the general public, they're still oblivious to all of this.
Right. Well, then I want to go, do you think this is carrying out on the international stage also? I mean, obviously it is, but the events that I'm thinking of right now were the disappearance of MH370 and the shooting down of MH17. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are around both of those events, if they're connected at all or if they're not connected. What do you think about those?
Me personally, I haven't looked into them too much, but from my initial analysis of just the little bit that I've looked into, I think they were going to use those planes to blame it on Putin in one way or another. And he stepped in and shot that down, no pun intended, but shot that down really quick, shut down the whole operation. But I think that they were intending to use it to provoke Russia or go into Russia.
Mm-hmm. So okay.
We've been trying to provoke Russia since 2007. Zbigniew Brzezinski writes in the Grand Chessboard that his way of waging war is to provoke a country into a war that they can't sustain. And he did this successfully with the fall of the Soviet Union when we backed the Taliban and the Mujahideen and our hero, of course, Osama bin Laden.
Right.
So the same playbook and the same game plan is being played out now, except it's against Russia and China. And I think the way that we were trying to provoke them initially was by going into Iran. Because if we go into Iran, they're both very good allies with Iran, and they're not going to take that.
Right.
And so that hasn't been able to play out because, again, Zbigniew Brzezinski writes that going into Iran is so unpredictable that they're not willing to do it at this time. But if you take a look at the Middle East, you see that we're setting up our chess pieces all around Iran for that final strike. But it's even coming down to the point now where we don't even have to go into Iran to provoke Russia and China because – Russia right now, they're banging their chest. They're flying planes right across our airspace here and saying, look, we're not going to put up with any of this anymore.
Right.
I think what's happened is we had a global government that was working together at one point in time. And then that started to crumble because you have the West and you have Russia, China, the BRIC alliance. Now they call it the BRIC alliance. Mm-hmm. You have them all working together. But then at the final stages of this plan, now you have a struggle for control. And it all goes right back to Israel, in my opinion. And you mentioned this in the first part of the show as well. And basically, they want to take that whole region, the Levant. That's why ISIS changed from the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria to the Islamic State of the Levant, of Iraq and the Levant, which encompasses Cyprus, it encompasses Jordan, it encompasses Lebanon, that whole entire region. And they want to make that all Israel.
Wow. That's going to take some doing. I mean, really.
That's what they're trying to provoke right now. That's why we see such a Western takeover of that entire region.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because we've had a couple other guests on that agree with that, that say that when that plane went down, MH17, that essentially that was supposed to be the beginning of World War III. You know, and it correlated, obviously, with the airstrikes against Gaza coming out of Israel. And I guess a lot of people are kind of wondering now if, because of what Putin has done, if the script has somehow been completely averted. Like, obviously, we're supposed to be knee deep in World War III at this point, according to some of the other people that we've spoken with, and we're not there right now. So, what do you think is going to happen with Putin? I mean, Putin seems to be in a pretty powerful position right now. I mean, he seems to be the one calling the shots because he's not prepared. You know, he's not afraid of using nuclear weapons against us. So. What do you think is going to happen going forward? Do we have any idea?
Putin is not a fool, not by any means. We right. should not underestimate him whatsoever. The stance that he seems to be taking is that the rest of the world can do whatever they want. And he's not going to impose Russian values upon the rest of the world. But if anybody tries to impose their values upon his country, then he will do whatever it takes in order to defend himself. And just listening to his latest speeches and just some of the actions that have come out of there, that's what I seem to be getting. But Russia is really key here because they are the only superpower left. Russia and with an allegiance to, or an alliance with China, they seem to be the last ones that we need to take down as the West in order to create this Zionist New World Order that they've been working on since, you know, for the last several hundred years.
Okay, and I'm of the opinion right now, we had a big article yesterday about the U.S. Army is preparing to move, I think, like 300 Abram tanks right, out into the Baltic area. Some of it will be in Germany, but a lot of it is going to be in that Baltic surrounding area. And I see moves like that. And initially what I think is, why are we putting technology from, you know, World War II out in a field where we really fundamentally right now are, you know, potentially technologically very far behind Russia? I mean, we had that incident of Russia essentially using a plane-mounted EMP-type device against the USS Cook just last week and completely shut the entire USS Cook down. So I'm looking at them putting these armaments, these ancient armaments, out in a field, and all I can think is this is just a clearinghouse. All we're doing is we're getting rid of old stock of weapons, and we're providing Russia and China with some fodder for their drone targeting skills as they're coming up. I mean, do you see us really actually going into a ground war with Russia? I mean, is that really potential?
It could very well be. At this point, everything is so unpredictable because we have two different lines of thinking here and two things that we really have to consider. Number one, are they really fighting with each other, or is it a puppet show? Or number two, are they really fighting with each other and it is a struggle for control at this time? If it is the second, then yeah, absolutely. It's gonna go until it blows up. But you also have to wonder, is this all just a puppet show? And how far will this puppet show actually go?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been wondering that. I mean, that to me, if these people have been working in collusion towards a global government, you know, one of the key obstacles to forming that is the value of the dollar right now. I mean, it's still very strong, really, considering all of the rhetoric against it. So I look at that and I think, well, to dissolve the dollar, you know, obviously the BRICS bank is going to have a pretty key role in that. It wouldn't make any sense to me to think that these guys were not working together towards this grand ultimate idea. And I'm trying to figure out what the steps would have to be in between here and there if they were in fact working together, you know.
If you ask me, the global currency is Bitcoin. And I know it's contrary to what a lot of people say, but as soon as I saw Bitcoin come out of nowhere, I said, this is the global currency. This is exactly where they're trying to move to, which is an all-digital currency that doesn't exist on paper. It exists solely in a computer system. And how are they going to introduce this? Well, let's make it look like it's some kind of independent thing that's taking over all these Federal Reserve currencies and the currencies of the other countries, etc. And then let's make people love it. Let's make people want it. And I hear in the Patriot movement, oh, it's Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. And that may very well be the case now, but Rockefeller, it was a couple of the banks, I don't remember who it was, JP Morgan. I want to say JP Morgan. Don't quote me on this though, but JP Morgan has bought out a bunch of Bitcoin and is very, very interested in the Bitcoin as well.
Really?
So that's just my intuition. It's not really based on anything that I've read or researched, but it makes sense when you consider that the last 20 years, everybody's been saying global currency is going to be all digital currency. They're going to put a chip in your hand, et cetera, et cetera. Why would it not be Bitcoin?
Right. Well, I mean, to me, you're replacing a fiat currency with another fiat currency, essentially. And granted, it's global and it's digital and you get around the central banks. But unless you're a hacker or somebody involved with the programming of the Bitcoin blockchain, how can you really say, yes, there's going to be a finite supply? You know what I mean? So.
Right.
And so again, getting back to what you just said, though, so you're not pro-Bitcoin then. It doesn't sound like you're a Bitcoin investor.
Well, when Bitcoin hit like $1,500, I was regretting not buying in when it was about $2 or $3
right,
when somebody first brought it to my attention. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I could have bought in at that time, and I probably should have, and it would have been, you know, a great profit and all that. But even at the very beginning, when the first person came to me and said, hey, check out this Bitcoin, it's only a buck or two or however much it was at the time, I said, no, this is the global currency. This is the digital, all digital currency that they've been talking about for all this time.
Huh. See, now
that's my intuition, and that's just my line of thinking. So a lot of people would disagree with me on that.
Well, and I don't disagree with you. I mean, obviously it is the most current, materialization of a global digital currency, which has obviously been something that's on the forefront. I just have a lot of trouble, figuring out if it's benevolent or if it, you know, I look at global currency and global government as tools. They're just, I mean, to me, it's just like the gun on the table, right? That gun could be used for good or it could be used for evil. But I'm not necessarily going to say global government is a bad thing. You know, if we could figure out a way to codify liberty for every inhabitant on the planet, utilize our resources in a way that feeds and clothes the world, and eliminate this the fictional constructs of scarcity and competition and profit, well, that's a global government that could work for me. You know what I mean?
And let's go to the Latin for a second. Government. Okay. Comes from two words, gubernatio, which is why you call the governor's race the gubernatorial race, mm-hmm. and mente. Gubernatio means to control. Mente means the mind. Government comes from the Latin meaning mind control. So when we talk about any kind of government, what kind of government is better, we're essentially talking about what kind of mind control is better.
Wow. Well, that just crushes my dreams into a small pile of
But I do agree with you because I'm completely against borders. Because I believe that as somebody born here on planet Earth, I have a right to travel anywhere on planet Earth without somebody telling me that I can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I remember wanting to go to Europe a few years back. I had a little bit of an inheritance after a family member passed away, and that's something that I wanted to do. But I had to jump through all these hoops to get a passport, and it was at that moment that I realized I have to ask somebody's permission to leave the country. Therefore, I'm a prisoner here.
Right. So, okay. So what would the solution be then?
There is no solution.
Really? Even like Gandhi. Well, I mean, Gandhi said you could do, small democratically run self-sufficient communities, which I would think would be a really big, that would be a huge change that we could see in the United States. I mean, if everybody changed their hearts and then their families and then their communities and all we had was a group or a loose association of democratically controlled self-sufficient communities, you wouldn't need nationalities at that point. So I see there has to be some kind of better than where we are now, you know?
Well, I completely agree with you. And that's the message that I talk about on my show as well, is changing one person. And all you have to change is the person staring you in the mirror. And if everybody took their responsibility, the whole world would change and we would realize we don't need police departments. We don't need governments. We don't need, all of these systems of control. But then when people riot and loot the dollar store, then, that's a whole, it makes me go, I don't think that we're going to achieve this ideology in my lifetime. However, if we don't start talking about this ideology, then it's never going to change. So it could be several generations down the road when we actually see a change. But I agree with you. That is the best way. I know personally, I don't need government in my life.
Exactly.
And the example that I give is I hit somebody's car on accident in the parking lot. And this was in my apartment complex at the time. And I went and I knocked on the guy's door and I said, hey, I'm sorry. I hit your car. Here's my insurance. I'll do whatever I can to take care of it. That's the kind of personal responsibility each and every one of us have to take. And we just have to operate in the mindset of, would you want somebody else to do to you what you're about to do to somebody else? So if you're going to hurt somebody else, would you want somebody to hurt you? No, absolutely not. So don't hurt anybody else. Mm-hmm. Simple.
It is simple. It stems from real simple understanding of liberty and where your rights come from. And I'm like you, I don't particularly want to be governed, which is one of the reasons I don't vote. And why I tell people that I don't vote is because I think if you want a master, by all means, go out and vote for one. But I feel pretty confident in my ability to self-govern. Just because I think if you're smart enough to do that, it should be your responsibility to do that. If not, that's your duty is self-government,
Exactly. I used to be, lack of a better term, and I don't like to label myself as anything, but I used to have an anarchist mentality.
Right.
And then somebody came and told me, anarchy is without rulers. Anarchy is without a government. Well, we do need a government, but you need to be the one to govern yourself. And so it's not about anarchy. It's about autonomous living. Nathan Fraser actually is the one that said that. And I said, wow, that's actually, I never really thought about that.
Well, and I think, honestly, that's the most important change that people can make. And it's funny to me, I get into arguments, not arguments, but I've got a lot of friends who are very, devout Christians, and they always want to tell me that this, that my key to being saved is to let Jesus into my heart. And I always stop them right there, and I always say, okay, so you understand then that what you're saying is that it has nothing to do with Jesus. It has everything to do with me making a choice to allow him into my heart. And people don't get that it comes down to a personal decision that everybody has to make to decide which line they're going to want to walk on. But at the end of the day, that everybody has the ability to affect their own hearts and then their own families and then their own communities. But until they decide to do so, They're going to be out looting the dollar stores, or right now sleeping in the Best Buy parking lot for 22 days so that they can buy a cheap TV from China. And I'm kind of with you. I wonder if the tide will ever turn.
Right, right. I tend to offend people because I'm truthful and blunt, but religion in itself, that's a whole nother control mechanism. But, you know, an example that I can make just by what you said, it's only through Jesus that you can be saved. Why? That alleviates all personal responsibility from the individual. Right. And this whole idea of the devil as well. Oh, the devil made me do it. There's dark influences around, et cetera, et cetera. No, no, no. Just stand up as a man. Take personal responsibility. If you did something bad, go make amends for it. You don't need Jesus. You don't need an outside force. You need to take responsibility for yourself. That's what it all comes down to.
Do you feel like there is alternatively, though, a force that exists in the universe, maybe on like a molecular level, that is intending to find balance, that there could be an overarching intention that is separate from us and our consciousness?
You mean like a Satan energy?
Not necessarily like a Satan energy or a Jesus energy, but I mean, what I guess what I'm stemming from is that when I was in high school and they taught me that what an atom looked like, protons, neutrons in the middle, electrons orbiting it, right? Well, that's not entirely true at all. We know that through science now that those electrons don't actually orbit anything. If we knew where they were orbiting, we could predict the future essentially in a material sense. But what those electrons actually do is pop in and out of existence. So the electron that makes up this atom in this desk that's in front of me could pop into the microphone and then could pop into me. And there's really no way to tell which electron is which. So to me, and according to science, there has to be some sort of intention that is driving the electrons to show up where and when they are. And to me, that intention is the one seeking balance, which would correlate spiritually to just about every religion that's ever come, especially a lot of the Eastern ones, saying that there is a force that exists in the universe on a molecular level working to find balance. And that intention could be called God or love or the spaghetti monster, or whatever word you want to use. But I'm wondering if you think that also, that possibly.
Oh, is there a God energy? Yeah. Absolutely. The way that I define God is that we are all God, and God is like the computer monitor, and each one of us is the pixel that makes up the whole image. And that's every single energy in the universe, not just humans, but every living creature, every rock, everything.
Right.
And we each make up that image of God. And so therefore we were actually created in the image of God, but at the same time, we are God.
Wow.
And that's why we have to take the personal responsibility for ourselves.
Wow. Man, this has been a fantastically interesting conversation. We're just about out of time. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today.
Thank you so much.
Oh, man, it's been an absolute pleasure. Please, everybody, go hit that donate button at truthfrequencyradio.com. Let's help Chris and help all the other hosts keep this network at the top of the heap in terms of alternative information and entertainment. It's been a wonderful day. I hope you guys have had a wonderful week. I look forward to joining all of you again on Monday. Our guest will be Ken Shortskin Jr. of the Daily Economist. So we'll get into some economic news. That's insight in that. Everybody, have a wonderful weekend. Take care, everybody.
Now I'm covered.
Now for the first time, you can be covered. If you've been waiting to be covered in mandates, regulations, and new fees, the time is finally here. So make some coffee.
I'm covered.
Approach life with reckless abandon. Kick your feet up.
I'm covered.
Because you're going to be in the waiting room for quite a while.
Healthcare.gov is not responsible for fulfilling any of the expectations, mandates, legal requirements, hopes, or dreams of any users. Results may vary. Consult your Obamacare-approved doctor or pharmacist to find out if Obamacare is right for you. Current waiting lists to have your doctor chosen for you are unavailable and will remain so for the foreseeable future. Obamacare may cause wait times, a decline in healthcare quality, money loss, political activism, anger, despair, hopelessness, frustration, European envy, dependence, and nausea. If you discover that your premiums have gone up as a result of Obamacare, please note that the program is working as intended and refrain from complaining. Call your doctor if you experience anxiety for longer than 4 hours. If you wish to opt out of Obamacare for any reason, please start a multi-million dollar business, join a union, or run for Congress.